She was an interesting person, this stern Australian nurse, taciturn, suspicious, and gracious. It took some time before Holmes' pleasant manner and frank acceptance of all that she said thawed her into a corresponding amiability. She did not attempt to conceal her hatred for her late employer. "Yes, sir, it is true that he threw the decanter at me. I heard him call my mistress a name, and I told him that he would not dare to speak so if her brother had been there. Then it was that he threw it at me. He might have thrown a dozen if he had but left my bonny bird alone. He was forever ill-treating her, and she too proud to complain. She will not even tell me all that he has done to her. She never told me of those marks on her arm that you saw this morning, but I know very well that they come from a stab with a hatpin. The sly devil! God forgive me that I should speak of him so, now that he is dead. But a devil he was, if ever one walked the earth. He was all honey when first we met him, only 18 months ago, and we both feel as if it were 18 years. She had only just arrived in London. Yes, it was her first voyage. She had never been from home before. He won her with his title and his money and his false London ways. If she made a mistake, she has paid for it, if ever a woman did. What month did we meet him? Well, I tell you, it was just after we arrived. We arrived in June, and it was July. They were married in January of last year. Yes, she's down in the morning room again, and I have no doubt she will see you. But you must not ask too much of her, for she has gone through all that flesh and blood will stand. Lady Brackenstall was reclining on the same couch, but looked brighter than before. The maid had entered with us, and began once more to foment the bruise upon her mistress' brow. "I hope," said the lady, "that you have not come to cross-examine me again." "No," Holmes answered, in his gentlest voice. "I will not cause you any unnecessary trouble, Lady Brackenstall, and my whole desire is to make things easy for you, for I am convinced that you are a much tried woman. If you will treat me as a friend and trust me, you may find that I will justify your trust." "What do you want me to do?" "To tell me the truth." "Mr. Holmes!" "No, no, Lady Brackenstall, it is no use. You may have heard of any little reputation which I possess. I will stake it all on the fact that your story is an absolute fabrication." Mistress and maid were both staring at Holmes with pale faces and frightened eyes.
"You are an impudent fellow!" cried Teresa. "Do you mean to say that my mistress has told a lie?"
Holmes rose from his chair. "Have you nothing to tell me?"
"I have told you everything."
"Think once more, Lady Brackenstall. Would it not be better to be frank?" For an instant there was hesitation in her beautiful face. Then some new strong thought caused it to set like a mask.
"I have told you all I know."
Holmes took his hat and shrugged his shoulders. "I am sorry," he said. And without another word we left the room and the house. There was a pond in the park, and to this my friend led the way. It was frozen over, but a single hole was left for the convenience of a solitary swan. Holmes gazed at it, and then passed on to the lodge gate. There he scribbled a short note for Stanley Hopkins, and left it with the lodge keeper. It may be a hit, or it may be a miss, but we are bound to do something for friend Hopkins, just to justify this second visit, said he. I will not quite take him into my confidence yet. I think our next scene of operations must be the shipping office of the Adelaide Southampton line, which stands at the end of Pall Mall, if I remember right. There is a second line of steamers which connect South Australia with England, but we will draw the larger cover first. Holmes' card sent in to the manager ensured instant attention, and he was not long in acquiring all the information he needed. In June of 95, only one of their line had reached a home port. It was the Rock of Gibraltar, their largest and best boat. A reference to the passenger list showed that Miss Fraser, of Adelaide, with her maid, had made the voyage in her. The boat was now somewhere south of the Suez Canal on her way to Australia. Her officers were the same as in 95, with one exception. The first officer, Mr. Jack Crocker, had been made a captain and was to take charge of their new ship, the Bass Rock, sailing in 2 days' time from Southampton. He lived at Sydenham, but he was likely to be in that morning for instructions if we cared to wait for him. No, Mr. Holmes had no desire to see him, but would be glad to know more about his record and character. His record was magnificent. There was not an officer in the fleet to touch him. As to his character, he was reliable on duty, but a wild, desperate fellow off the deck of his ship, hot-headed, excitable, but loyal, honest, and kind-hearted. That was the pith of the information with which Holmes left the office of the Adelaide Southampton Company. Thence he drove to Scotland Yard, but instead of entering, he sat in his cab with his brows drawn down, lost in profound thought. Finally, he drove round to the Charing Cross telegraph office, sent off a message, and then at last we made for Baker Street once more. "No, I couldn't do it, Watson," said he, as we re-entered our room. "Once that warrant was made out, nothing on earth would save him. Once or twice in my career I feel that I have done more real harm by my discovery of the criminal than ever he had done by his crime. I have learned caution now, and I had rather play tricks with the law of England than with my own conscience. Let us know a little more before we act." Before evening we had a visit from Inspector Stanley Hopkins. Things were not going very well with him. "I believe that you are a wizard, Mr. Holmes. I really do sometimes think that you have powers that are not human. Now, how on earth could you know that the stolen silver was at the bottom of that pond?" "I didn't know it." "But you told me to examine it." "You got it, then?" "Yes, I got it." "I'm very glad if I have helped you." "But you haven't helped me. You have made the affair far more difficult. What sort of burglars are they who steal silver and then throw it into the nearest pond?" "It was certainly rather eccentric behaviour. I was merely going on the idea that if the silver had been taken by persons who did not want it, who merely took it for a blind, as it were, then they would naturally be anxious to get rid of it." "But why should such an idea cross your mind?" "Well, I thought it was possible. When they came out through the French window, there was the pond with one tempting little hole in the ice, right in front of their noses. Could there be a better hiding place?" "Ah, a hiding place. That is better," cried Stanley Hopkins. "Yes, yes, I see it all now. It was early. There were folk upon the roads. They were afraid of being seen with the silver, so they sank it in the pond, intending to return for it when the coast was clear. Excellent, Mr. Holmes. That is better than your idea of a blind." "Quite so. You have got an admirable theory. I have no doubt that my own ideas were quite wild, but you must admit that they have ended in discovering the silver." "Yes, sir, yes. It was all your doing, but I have had a bad setback." "A setback?" "Yes, Mr. Holmes. The Randall gang were arrested in New York this morning." "Dear me, Hopkins, that is certainly rather against your theory that they committed a murder in Kent last night." "It is fatal, Mr. Holmes, absolutely fatal. Still, there are other gangs of three besides the Randalls, or it may be some new gang of which the police have never heard." "Quite so. It is perfectly possible." "What, are you off?" "Yes, Mr. Holmes. There is no rest for me until I have got to the bottom of the business. I suppose you have no hint to give me?"
"I have given you one."
"Which?"
"Well, I suggested a blind."
"But why, Mr. Holmes? Why?"
"Ah, that's the question, of course. But I commend the idea to your mind. You might possibly find that there was something in it. You won't stop for dinner?" "Well, good-bye, and let us know how you get on."